That is Air on Radio 3, who was surfing on a rocket. That's the best song I could think of to introduce Morris Misolowski, business futurist, to the stars. How are you?
To the stars or in the stars?
Yeah,
Happy Tuesday, everyone.
To the moon and infinity and all that kind of stuff.
To infinity and beyond.
Yeah. Do you know why I'm saying that? Because they're things that wide-eyed schoolboys would, and girls, of course, would have been saying forever, looking out of their window and all that kind of stuff. And now, it's just, as Morris said, it looks like space travel is becoming a bit of a new gold rush. It's just gone cheesy, hasn't it?
It's gone ridiculous. If you've got a cool $500,000 or more, you can actually go into space. You can't spend long there, a couple of minutes. You just go up to the line, and the Kármán line, about 100 kilometres above us, and you're technically in space, and a lot of the boys, because most of them are,
yeah,
the billionaires are trying to get there or trying to take other people there. It's an incredible...
This is just like hedonism on a plate, really, isn't it? It's just rich.
Yeah, look, I think
stuff.
It absolutely is. And I use the word boys because that's what it is primarily. It's all the boys who grew up in the 60s and 70s reading sci-fi or being geeks or nerds and dreaming about it, who now have more money than they know what to do with. You know, the Elon Musks, and you've got Jeff Bezos, and you've got Richard Branson, and it just goes on and on. And it's not so much governments, because when I grew up, it was governments. It was NASA. It was, you know, Russia. It was China.
I was going to say, and it was for a reason.
Yeah, we had to be the first there. I mean, you know, the Russians and the Americans have literally fought each other.
Yeah.
Like two schoolboys in the yard pushed each other out of the way to see who could get there first. I put the first monkey up there. I put the first dog up there, the first person, the first woman, the first everything.
Yeah.
And they had this big race going on. And then all of a sudden, the oxygen and the cash got sucked out of it in the 1980s, 1990s. It became less important as there was more things to... better things they thought, the governments, that is, they thought to do with their money, like keeping their citizens alive and fed and with health.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, just that small thing. So they took a lot of money out of space for a very long time, and it kind of languished until these rich boys came along and decided, well, I got a bit of money, let's go off to space.
Well, that takes us immediately down another wormhole, which is, what do the children of today dream about if they can't dream about that in the same way?
Well, I think they actually dream more about it than we did, Phil, because when we dreamed about it, I think we weren't any different from the first person on this earth. We looked up at that thing in the sky and wondered, could a human ever get there? And for most of my life, I mean, it's not true, actually, when I was very young, I shouldn't say that at all, when I was very young, the first time ever we saw a man on earth, I remember as a child, I've told the story many times to many audiences, I was in grade 2, so it was a long time ago, you know, when you pushed the dinosaurs out of the way and did all that kind of stuff, as my kids would say. I remember...
So there were people and dinosaurs at the same... Never mind.
I think so. Me and a couple of my, you know, pets were around.
Yeah.
I remember being taken in grade 2 to sit on the in the hall, the school hall, with a whole lot of other kids, hundreds of other kids, for this trolley to be wheeled down, and I can still hear it clunk, clunk, clunk down the corridor. And on top of that was a black and white TV that was strapped to it. And I don't know whether you had the same as a kid when the AV came in, this long trolley, you know, this tall trolley with this old TV
that
literally had a seatbelt strapped over the top of it. And the guy came in, the AV guy, I assume, and he turned this thing on and tuned it in, and we were all sitting there anticipating because, of course, what we were about to witness was man landing on the moon.
Righto.
And this little box in front of us, you know, a couple of hundred kids all staring at this box, being told how incredible this thing was. And that was the first time that we had ever stepped foot on the moon.
That must have been incredible. I suppose the one thing that people don't think about too much was how advanced their comms were, actually.
Oh, extraordinary. For the times, extraordinary. We've all heard since then that we carry more power in our mobile phone than that NASA thing did. We know that. But for the time, it was incredible. Literally, to put this aluminium can, it wasn't, but this aluminium can up into space to get it to the moon, to get these people out of it and literally kicking the dust up there and then bring them back. Extraordinary.
Well, we're thinking about this today because I think it's solstice, solar, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's always around this time of year rockets and shuttles have been sent off. So I think it was pretty appropriate that we talk about this. So the next Fortune 500, Morris, that was your little whim. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Well, it's become a big, big business. As I said, before it was all governments. It wasn't really about making money. You know, we can want governments to make money. They don't. They just spend it. But since the big boys have gone in...
It's the wrong time to be talking about that right now.
Well, it's the best time because it's true.
Yeah.
So It wasn't really a business as such, but since then it has become one. At the moment, literally now, it's a $600 billion US business, and the US dollar is worth much more than it was before. I mean, in Australia anyway. But let's not go down that road. But what is more important, by 2040, we believe it's going to be a $2 trillion business. $2 trillion. It's going to be huge.
Okay.
And we're going to see it in all kinds of different ways. We're going to see people travelling again. By 2040, I think it's still going to be relatively expensive. But for those that were used to the top-end cruises that kind of went on, you know, the really, really expensive ones, they will be able to afford it. Because right now, as I said, it's about $500,000. I know that's a lot of money for the...
But you said right now it's just in and out. I mean, there's not...
It's up and down. It's literally up to the 100-kilometre line, what's called the Kármán line.
All right, well, comparing it to a cruise is a bit of a stretch, isn't it?
No, I'm talking about price. Price-wise.
Oh, right. Well, that too.
The really expensive heel, you know, that used to travel first class on the Titanic, let's hope it doesn't have the same thing. You know, those people who have more, who have a bit of extra cash around might want to do that. But I think by 2040, it's kind of going to get to the point, 2040, 2050, where we will start to see, I know this sounds incredible, but we will start to see hotels up in space. We'll see the ability of people spending more than just an hour or two floating around. And there's been lots of prototypes for that. Most of the hotel chains, Hilton's, the Marriott's and others, have all put out prototypes at one stage or another showing their first hotel. None of them, of course, have been built, have been thought to be built, but they're all playing with the notion of it.
What kind of thing are we, you know, visually?
It's not that far. I mean, we don't know because they're prototypes. Yeah, so most of the prototypes come from the sci-fis, you know, where we have the big windows that stare out into space and the comfy lounges and those kinds of things where gravity exists internally, of course, inside of this large piece of hotel structure.
Right.
They're quite swanky. I mean, they're quite swanky and they can be done. We've got the ability to do it. We could send it up in bits and pieces like the space station. So, and we can also 3D print, which is the other thing that's becoming popular. There's a company called Redwire Space that is, and they're one of many, but they're the better known brand, whose entire existence is trying to figure out how we 3D print in space. In other words, don't take up all the big things, get them actually printed in these 3D printers up there ready to go and ready to live
sense.
In.
Makes sense.
All right, well, it makes some sense, yeah.
Let me ask you this. It's a bit loose, this one. So you're talking about the ability of the civilian spacecraft now, I suppose, up, down, and some make it and some don't get very far and all that kind of stuff. So if we could compare this to the timeline of powered flight, 1900s, whatever, where would we be if we were in the 1900s and we were all about aeroplanes, where would we be in that timeline now with spacecraft?
We would be at Kitty Hawk watching the planes take off. Can I give you my usual strap line for this?
Go on then.
In my best voice, in the 1800s it was railroads. In the 1900s it was highways. In the 2000s it's spaceports. And that's pretty much where we're at. Because the 1800s we opened up the railroads and we began to go across our continents.
Yep.
Around 1900 or so, we invented the car and we began to go across continents in our car and do our own thing. Yeah. Right now, it's the equivalent. We know that we can get into space. We're getting better at it. The cars, which are, of course, all of the machines that take us up there, are also getting better and relatively cheaper.
But it's Kitty Hawk.
This century and next will be about what we can do up there.
Whatever happened to Hyperloops and stuff? There was a lot of talk about underground, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was, and Hyperloop still kind of sort of exists, especially in Elon's mind.
Yeah.
That's Elon Musk's mind. We have one that runs kind of sort of under Las Vegas, but it doesn't. And there are a couple of others that are supposedly being built. The Hyperloop was this notion that we could put something like a train into a vacuum tube, a very, very long one, hundreds of kilometres long.
Yep.
And inside of that, we would suck the air out, much like we used to do, if you remember, well, I don't remember, but watching the video
shop
stuff.
Things.
In a lot of the department stores and other stores, they used to have this vacuum tube near the cashier and it would suck up the money and take it into the back and send vice versa.
That must have been a brilliant invention, actually, if you think about it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, again, looking back, it seems ordinary, but looking forward, where these things didn't exist and you had to build the tube and the vacuum mechanism and the rest of it, quite, quite extraordinary. So that kind of thing has been talked about for about 15 years or so, I think, was when he first started talking about it. Again, our friend Elon Musk. Lots of people keep talking about it, him especially. Governments, a few governments have said they're going to do it. I've not yet seen a working model where it actually is working and it exists. But who knows?
Is it meant to be like for, I don't know, bigger bus rides? Is it that vibe between towns?
No, it's even faster. It's meant to be the bullet train, absolutely on steroids.
I know it goes really, really fast, but what are we talking, regional journeys or what?
Look, in his mind, it's on continent and between continent as well, because he thinks we can go, because it's so quick, we could go under the oceans or through the oceans in these things, is how he sees it eventually. It could literally hook up the entire planet, where we have railways going from one state to another in Europe, for instance, which seems ordinary and, of course, expected. He saw this hyperlinks as being the same thing. So it would hook up literal continents together and give them so-called bridges of transport.
When you talk about a space gold rush, that brings up notions of real avarice and greed and violence and aggression to get there first. I mean, that's pretty much on the money, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. Bang on. You know, the question at this stage is who owns space?
Yeah, well.
And there is an agreement between most of the nations on the Earth of who owns it, but it's not worth the paper it's printed on, because it's not printed anyway, but it's not worth it because whoever gets up there first wants to put their flag on it, as the Americans did on the moon, as Elon Musk insists he's going to do on Mars. You know, every country, China, India, it doesn't matter. Every country wants to be it and have it. And I see it, unfortunately, the same as many countries did around the 1670s, 1800s, you know, with India's spice trade and all those kinds of companies just literally going to a land, didn't matter who or what was there, and saying, it's mine because I'm here now.
I think it's time that we brought out that picture that's got squillions of dots and everything all over it, and we're not even big enough to be one of the squillions of dots, and this is the bit where we talk about mankind just being totally bananas.
I can't disagree at all. We've spent a lot of time and effort thinking about getting into space. I think it makes some sense.
Yeah.
Again, going back to our friend Elon, because he's one of the biggest voices at the moment talking about this, he sees this, and maybe it was prophetic, not pathetic, prophetic of him before he got into his most current role, was that he saw humanity as really imploding and he needed to put a version of humanity somewhere far away so that we would continue to live and wanted that to be Mars. Maybe he had thought that he might be doing what he's currently doing and the world would implode and we would have to leave and start again. But anyway, he sees that as being one of the main reasons. There are a whole lot of other ones, and there are incredible commercial reasons, because mining, for instance, I've talked about this with mining clients for about 20 years or more. There are extraordinary amounts of mining for all sorts of minerals and things that we don't yet use because we don't have them and haven't been discovered yet, literally flying in and out of space, and they are worth squillions and squillions of dollars. So the mining industry
is going very much horrible humans, this conversation.
Yeah. I'm not disagreeing at all, because we will rape and pillage. I mean, we will do really horrible things, I think, because it exists and we want it. And there's nobody between those two things.
I've just realised how pointless we are, Morris. I think it's time to go home.
It's sounding terrible, isn't it? The mining, by the way, is not to bring it back to Earth. That's very, very few mining companies are talking about that, because in space it weighs very little. It's easy to manoeuvre and manipulate and do all kinds of things. They actually want to mine so that they can then use what the minerals and other things that they find in space. So they want to use that for communication, for buildings, for logistics, for all kinds of things. So they're looking at it as the raw product from which then to build out this space odyssey, whatever it becomes.
Yeah, well, let's just go back to where we started talking about, you know, NASA, government-funded exploration, all that kind of stuff. 1950s, 1960s, the heyday. What's your feeling comparing that kind of organisation to, you know, every rich Joe building a spaceship these days? Did it have more finesse, more control, more style, more...
No, it's out of control, because now pretty much if you've got enough money, you can send something up.
You know, Did you prefer it the old way?
I did, because it was far more like a kid's own adventure.
Yeah.
I mean, it was out of reach and there were only a couple of people and it was so incredibly different. Now most people don't even bother reading the headline that says another, you know, SpaceX or another Blue Origin or Virgin Galactic. It's a so what. At the moment, we have 9,300 active satellites orbiting Earth. and we have 36,000 pieces of junk up there, and a lot of it's getting in the way. A lot of it is starting to actually hit satellites. So there is this whole new race going on, including a new profession. And the new profession is space traffic controller, you know, like we have for the planes. There's literally now a group of people who are space traffic controllers who you have to go through, I think absolutely rightly, to say that, you know, my bit of whatever I'm sending up is going in this direction and that, you know, it's not going to hit this, that and the other. But they're also trying to figure out when a lot of the space junk is going, where the satellites are, so they don't collide and hit each other and fall back to Earth and do whatever else they might do.
We really are getting into the realms of movies now, because all these anti-heroes who are like space junk collectors and, you know, bounty hunters of space junk and all that stuff all over Hollywood.
Yeah. But it's an actual job. I mean, I thought it was something made up too, but it is. And there are government departments now, because it has to be government department for everything, that oversees space traffic control. Extraordinary.
Well, thanks very much. You've sort of filled us in exactly. Because we've talked about jobs in the future, and you've actually never mentioned this before. I mean, what was it? The AI trainer. Yeah, whatever. Big deal. But this sounds like a cracker.
Doesn't it?
Space traffic controller. Brilliant, Maurice. Well, thanks very much, as always. Lovely to chat with you. Anything you would like to point our listeners to on your website, even if you've put nothing else on there? What's going?
There's a couple of new articles at the blog, which is morrisfuturist.com/blog.
Lovely. I'll catch up with you next week if you're free. As always, great fun there. Maurice Misolowski, live.